Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
An Erio's original.
The great fable in America is that black can be defined, but white can't. How white people are allowed so much nuance. That's just something that people do, but when I do something, it's a black thing.
Hi, this is Margaret Cho. Welcome to The Margaret Cho. Today we have my friend. She is an author, a poet, a musician, a model, an actress. She wrote a piece on Medium called Dear White Friends, I See Right Through Your Hashtag Black Lives Matter Posts, among others. Lots of poetry collections. She is a really, really cool lady and a friend of mine. We have Elise Cizek. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. I've got some weird anxiety today, but other than that, I'm doing okay.
It's an anxious time.
Yeah, definitely.
It's an anxious time. It's like a million things are happening. It's an anxious time. It's a crazy time. I mean, there's a global pandemic. There's people dying, people being killed by the police, black people being killed by the police.
Yes.
Daily.
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 And it's being shared so much.
Yes.
It's not that this hasn't been happening, because it has been happening for a long time. But I do believe that it's a little bit worse because of the, like, it's no longer something that people can escape from. It's something that is so to the, it's like right up in front of our faces. As soon as we open our phones, we're seeing it, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, it is a lot.
This has been happening for 500 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been happening daily for 500 years. Like, it's like, but we've been hiding it from ourselves. We've been hiding it from each other. And we're trying to stop it. And it's like, the horrible fact is that we've kept it a secret from ourselves.
Yes, exactly. It's partially been, you know, under wraps because the people that are doing it feel like they're entitled to it. And so the narrative has been changed around it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, you know, like, 5-10 years ago, when someone was killed by police, the first thing that everyone would say was, well, what did that person do? Because they must have deserved it in one way or another.
Right.
There must have been something that they did that brought that on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're finally looking at this perspective in the way that's like, we have people out there that are abusing their power on a daily basis.
Right.
It hurts my heart that the voices of black people, of black families, of people that have been killed, haven't been heard until there's a video that white people can't hide from, you know?
We can't deny it. We can't deny it because we're seeing it. And it's like, we had to make technology catch up to our actions. Like, we had to like wait till we had like a witness in our phones, in our like the technology had to catch up to us too. We had a physical witness.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, it's really, I'm trying to word this correctly, but it's a kind of along the same lines as how, you know, like rape and sexual assault had been happening for a really long time against women, and women were speaking up about it and speaking up against it. And the argument was always like, well, I mean, who are we to really believe in this situation? And it was always, well, like that guy couldn't have been that awful. Like we have this idea of what a bad guy looks like, and it never looks like us. And so when these things start coming to the surface and we start actually seeing that this is happening, these videos, that are so horrific and so traumatizing that are everywhere. Mm-hmm. We can't just say like, well, how do we know what really happened? It's like you're seeing it. It's not something that's really up for debate on whether or not it's wrong. We now agree this is happening and this is wrong. Right. And the hard thing that I know it's like within me is that like, I want to change the world. You know, so many people that are marching and showing up every day and making signs, they want to change the world. Mm-hmm. And what they're really seeing is that just because you want to doesn't mean that the fight's going to be easy. Just because we're all in agreement that this is a bad thing, that this is a really dark spot on our American culture, we want to be able to change it instantaneously. And it's not going to let up because we can't. It takes a lot to undo what has been done. These roots grow really deep and really dense.
Yes. Yes, mm-hmm. It's true. But I think that there is a spirit of change, that there is a spirit of growth. And, you know, you were talking about this. You and I had a conversation about race and all of these issues in, I think it was April. This was like very, like before the shutdown, before like all of this, we were like talking a lot about this. And it's like very deep, in a very deep way. You're having a lot of these feelings. And it was all sort of like, you think it was like a collective thing of like, maybe this was all sort of brewing under the surface anyway, around these issues of like identity. And this has sort of been under the surface for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. Well, I can only speak really for myself on this. I know that my journey in my own self-education and in this unpacking of my own internalized white supremacy, it really started about 4 years ago. The way it started for me was that I moved to Los Angeles from a very small town in Wisconsin. So I'm from a town of, I think it was like 7,000 people when I was growing up. I think it's now up to 10. But it's a rural town surrounded by cornfields on all sides, predominantly white. And my family, my parents are an interracial couple. My mom is Black. My dad's white. They've been together for 39 years, going on 40. And, you know, well, married for that long. They've been together for longer. But, you know, our family in that town, it confused a lot of people. And my presence in my class and among my friends, I always felt different. I always felt uncomfortable. I knew I looked different from everyone. But I also, you know, I went along with a lot of things. The ways that people spoke to me, I believed was true. You know, when someone said like, oh my God, Elise, you're not that Black because I listened to a certain kind of music or because I spoke in a certain way, I took that as being a fact because I didn't have anything to contrast it against. I didn't have an experience other than that. So for a long time, I had a really hard time finding my place in society, allowing my own Blackness, allowing myself to feel comfortable in the skin that I'm in and not try to deny it or have like a lot of self-hate around it. And when I moved to LA, I came here with a lot of very racist ideas. My whole concept of myself and of society was in this very white supremacist, like, perspective. And it wasn't hateful outwardly. but it was self-hate and it was judgment and it was prejudice. And that's absolutely like the kindling for hate. Mm-hmm. And I had that within me. And I was in a group on Facebook of a bunch of women of color that all came together just to have a safe space. And I was, it was made very clear to me that I was making that space feel unsafe with the, mm-hmm. the perspective that I had, with the judgments that I had. And when I was first called out, it wasn't like, it felt like an attack. It felt like bullying. I'm like, why are you speaking to me this way? Yeah. When people are saying like, Elise, you're a Black woman, and I don't know how you've been able to deny this to yourself for so mm-hmm. long, but as you walk through the world, people see you as a light-skinned Black woman. And I had this concept of myself as being a completely unique creature among the world, that like I could shed both sides of my race and be just like my special little self without realizing that I'm a person among people. And the way that I carry myself, and it's a really messed up thing that, you know, and I'm sure you have this experience as well. In a white supremacist society, or, you know, white majority, as we walk through the world, we are a representative of our entire race.
Oh, yeah, totally.
To a lot of people, you know?
Yeah, completely.
And in the way that I was doing that, I was trying so hard to gain the approval and the validation of the white people in my community and the white people mm-hmm. in my little society, my little circle. Mm-hmm. And in that, I was the Black friend that was allowing my friends to be racist. I was mm-hmm. the Black friend that was participating in that racism.
Yeah.
And when I then found myself in a community of women of color, they were like, no, that's not okay. Like, yeah. you can't, yeah. like, that's a really harmful way to be thinking. And at first I was so mad, and I got blocked from this group for like, you know, self-victimizing. Why are you doing this to me? And made it really self-centered. And then I had this moment of clarity that for the first time in my life, I thought, what if I'm wrong? Mm. And that question is the thing that opened up my entire perspective. That's what gave me the first glimmer into what needs to be changed. Mm-hmm. It's taken a lot of work to unpack all of that. And I mean, it didn't happen instantaneously by any means. And it's still happening slowly today. There are a lot of things, a lot of ways that I see the world today, a lot of voices in the back of my head that will pop in that are really that I'm catching. I'm like, whoa, that was something that I just thought. Uh-huh. Like, what's going on? And I know that a lot of white people right now are having that experience where they're walking mm-hmm. through the world listening, and they're like, oh my God, that thought that I just had is exactly what I was yelling at someone on Facebook about 5 minutes ago, you know? Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And that's so important. I think I finally was able to free myself from a lot of the fear when, like, the fear of being wrong by allowing myself to be wrong, allowing my mistakes, saying that, like, okay, that is where the problem is. Now, how can I find the solution? And the article that I wrote, Dear White Friends, it was initially written toward three people on my Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I'll go into that a little bit more, but the reason that I wrote it the way that I did is because it frustrates me so much that there are so many people right now that, because of this movement, they're like Black Lives Matter all over their social media and saying, you know, calling out their friends on social media for being silent. Why aren't you saying anything? Like, why are you posting a video of you doing makeup right now when the whole world is in crisis? And it's like, okay, I understand that you're outraged. Of course, I understand that outrage. But this is an outrage that has been going on for 400 years, mm-hmm. you know? And because now you are waking up to it, I think it's important for us to have humility in being able to look at our own actions And rather than immediately throwing that outrage at somebody else, I'm so mad at you because you are on the wrong side of history. It's like, actually, I guarantee you that you have been too, that I have been too. And for those three people that I specifically wrote it for, one of them is a guy I used to date. And when the there were all these protests around Ferguson, and there was a Dontre Hamilton who was killed in Milwaukee at Red Arrow Park. In my article, I said he was shot 10 times. It was actually 14. Someone corrected me. I want to be clear about that. But there were these protests that were people were blocking off the freeway. And everyone on my Facebook, all of my friends, my closest friends, were like, run them over. Just if I was there, I would just run them over. And this guy that I used to date was one of those people. I remember a picture that he posted, which was like just a car driving into people with them flying over the car and just saying like, this is how I feel about Black Lives Matter. And now every day he's posting something just like, how could we still have racism in 2020? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it's because you, honestly, yeah. You know,
yeah.
It's, and the fact that I didn't call those things out, that I didn't fight against them, it's also because of me.
Yeah.
And so I totally believe that people can change and move forward and have beautiful revelations and learning experiences. But in order for that to feel like it's genuine and to feel like it's not something that is a performance, I need to know that you understand your part in it. I need to know that I'm not the only one who's doing this unpacking, you know? And I want to encourage people to really unpack that within themselves. You don't have to share it on social media. You don't have to write me a letter telling me all of the things that you did that were racist, but like take an inventory of it.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
What does that look like for you? What has it looked like in your own life?
Right.
I went on a tangent there.
No, it's good though, but I think it's good like to even talk about it because, I think that like the fear of making mistakes is that's what keeps people silent, and that that white silence keeps us stuck in that racism, you know, and that fear of making the mistake is really what's keeps us stuck. And that's what's worse, you know, so it's like, go ahead, make the mistakes. It's okay to make the mistakes. What's worse is to just be stuck in that like fear of making them. And then, you know, like I think it's okay to make those mistakes. It's okay to say whatever it is and then be corrected and then move on. And then don't be stuck in the shame of the correction, which I think is what people get stuck in it because they think, oh, they've got to be right the whole time. And it's like, you don't have to be right, and you're not going to be right the whole time. And I think it is like the sort of thing of like, yeah, but I'm the oppressor. I have to be right. No, you don't. It's like the sort of thing of like, yeah, you need to sort of give up the mantle of superiority and like stop being the oppressor. You know, just like stop.
Yeah. Stop. Yeah. There's yeah, that's a really big part of it. And that's something that, you know, I've read all the comments on my article, which I don't recommend anybody does, but I'm glad that I did because it gave me an idea of how people are receiving it. And one of the major things that I heard was, why are you villainizing people that are just trying to do their best? And I want to be really clear that that was not at all my intention. And I know that in the way that I wrote it too, I wrote it when I was really upset. It was a day that I cried so much and I just needed to put something down. It wasn't something that I intended to even like publish on that grand of a platform and have that many people see, but it was something that needed to come out. And I agree with that. I do agree that like people are just trying to do their best right now.
Yeah,
and sometimes they are going to screw something up. And I wrote another article about, it was the problematic potential of white noise. And it was how the outrage, like white outrage right now, it's huge. And that's where a lot of the fuel for the fire is coming from. but I really want it to be focused. I really want that outrage to be focused. And that's what I'm trying to focus on with myself. When I get into that like really upset place, I do need to have a place of pause. When I wrote that article, it wasn't like, I'm so mad and I'm like doing like this. It was like, I needed to cry. I needed to let that stuff out. How am I actually feeling? Okay, here it is. Mm-hmm. And trying to navigate our emotions as human beings in America right now is kind of, it's a superpower. Like if you're able to just like feel something and then like put some pause between that the thought, the feeling and the action, like inserting a few breaths in between each one to make sure that you're staying grounded is so important. And I don't want anyone to think that that their best intentions, like, well, that's not good enough. That's not my intention. My intention is to like, okay, I understand that you're having these feelings and you want to do something for the better of Black people. You want to create change. You want to save the world. Amazing. Good. Mm-hmm. Let's do it. But we need to do this in a way that we can like, okay, these feelings are why I want to do this.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take a deep breath and let those feelings pass and remind myself that there is a mission that's here.
Yeah.
Not to make it about me, not to make it about like just this, you know, the shame of it. I'm not going to be acting out of that shame.
Yeah.
I need to allow myself to feel it. Okay, I feel that. I recognize it. Then what actions can I take in a direction that can actually make change for the better?
Yeah. And there's a much greater purpose here. I mean, it's a really important thing to talk about and get perspective on and to, you know, to have a larger conversation about. Because so many people are sort of stuck in this place of like unable to verbalize exactly how to go about it. And what's great, too, is to have artists put words to all of these feelings and put action to all of these feelings, you know, because it's like a very difficult place that we're in. And it's like, what kind of art can we create around this, whether it's just writing or even just talking about it or creating art about it? You know, and it's like, it's almost like we'll get to that point of creating art about it. It's like now it's just like the function of art to just have artists process it, I think, right now.
Absolutely.
Because we're just experiencing it. And now it's like, we'll take this point of like, okay, now like as artists, we'll just experience it. And now we'll take it from here and then create art about it. And then, you know, like then it'll just gradually sort of like move into society. But it's just like, we're just experiencing it all. Like it'll vibrate through society, you know? And it's just a very, I mean, it's a hard thing. It's a very tough thing. And everybody has all of these feelings about it. Some of it comes out in outrage, even like stuff like outrage at it's funny how it comes out, that thing that all of those actors did about like how they're not going to be racist anymore, like the with you know, the you know, all those like actors that, like Julianne Moore and Kristen Bell, and it's so funny how mad people got. And I'm like, it's kind of a funny video too.
They're
super upset, and I'm like, "What?"
And they're reading. That was the thing that really got me. Where it's like, so "Oh funny. God, who was it?" Someone's like really close, but like you could tell that he's their eyes are moving.
We're acting, but their eyes are moving.
It's so when you can see someone, like that's the thing. Like you're not supposed to see someone act. Right?
Yeah.
You're supposed to believe that they mean it. But like for actors to then very like they were acting these feelings. Yeah. And it like I wasn't outraged by it. Like I wasn't like angry to the point that I needed to write a nasty email or something, but like I was like, really, you guys? Like you fine, okay, this is where we're gonna go with this.
Element of it, because it was so heartfelt, but it was the teleprompter too, so that was the disconnect of like, it's like you're reading the news but you're like emoting. It was the guy from Breaking Bad.
Yes.
that was really funny because it was heartfelt, but it was still the teleprompter, so it was like you really felt it but not enough to memorize.
there were like two people that I'm pretty sure had it memorized, and I was like, excellent, great job. But that's the thing where like I imagine what that was like, where it's like, you know, You get this, you get an email that says, hey, we, you know, it would be a good idea for you to participate in this. It's for a good cause and whatever. And so they're like, okay, soft black and white filter.
They're probably doing it at home by themselves, you know?
Yeah.
And they're like trying to do it really fast. They're like, we need it by the end of the day. And then, of course, and I love Julianne Moore. She's actually great. She's actually a great person. She's really nice. And she's definitely, like, all of them politically are super, everybody's definitely cool. You know?
Totally.
But
totally,
you know, like, you have a whole bunch of texts to, like, and they're probably not sure, like, who they're going to do what. And they have a lot of things to memorize. And they're like, oh, shit, I got to do it by myself. And then they probably deleted the good one accidentally. Their internet's cutting out.
Right.
And they're like trying to get it. And they're like, you know, whatever.
Like, I want to see what the blooper reel was for that. Because you know that there were so many extra takes that were just like, wait, was that racism? Okay. That's it. Okay. Shoot.
Okay. I'm not going to. Oh, okay. I'm trying to be serious. I mean, it's
sure
it was very hard. I'm sure, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Very difficult. I'm sure they did a great whatever, you know, but it was funny how everybody, it was definitely like similar to the similar reaction to that Imagine when everybody was singing Imagine.
Yeah, I think that just, I mean, that's so funny to me, especially now. We've been in quarantine. We've been in a pandemic for how many months now? Like, it's summer. Like, it's fully about to be summer.
Yeah.
And this started like right before the beginning of spring. So, like, it's been a while since we've been in. It's been a whole season. And they did that like 2 weeks in.
Right.
It's 2 weeks in. It's like, oh my God, you know what? I'm going to go to my grotto and I'm going to record this very heartfelt video version of Imagine. And, like, I don't know. I feel like John Lennon would be rolling in his grave right now, to be honest. Like,
And it's so funny because it's just like, nobody wants to see that.
No.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
My favorite thing that has come out of, like, quarantine celebrities getting together to do something was the stunt video with Zoe Bell. I don't know if you saw, it was like Zoe Bell started this thing where, like, it was, they were all, like, fighting each other. So one person would, like, you know.
Oh, yeah, that was good. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That gave me, I mean, that was, like, my good feels for, for, like, a good couple of weeks. I felt great about that. I'm like, yes, it was all of these incredible, strong women. Like, and also, you know, one of my favorite movies of all time is Death Proof. And so to have, like, everyone who was in that movie. Also
so
be on
good.
There. Just like, it tickled me.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was a tangent. But back, what you were saying though is like the outrage that we have right now, it's all over the place because we're having a lot of feelings. And I know that when I'm upset, if there's something going on inside of me, everything that I look at is going to be something that pisses me off. So even when we're not in a pandemic and this massive racial tension, if I wake up on the wrong side of the bed in the morning, like someone could not use their turn signal. And that would be a reason for me to want to make an angry Facebook post. You know, I would want to like take to it. But right now we're in our homes. You know, most of us are still like, for the most part, still very isolated. And we already have all of this, like, this upset, this tension that's within us, this anxiety of what's going to be happening. And then when you mix into that a massive tragedy that is everywhere, that's a very traumatizing video for anyone to watch. And you add that to the, like, there's the social tension between like races, the power structure of America, the hierarchy of class, the class system. With all of that mixed together, now everything has come to a head, and we have this like this massively inflamed whitehead. Like, what do we do with that, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just getting angrier and angrier. And like, you know, there are two ways to treat a whitehead. You can try to treat it from the outside, mm-hmm. or you can pop it.
Yeah.
And see what happens when it heals, you know? Either way, it's going to be messy. It's yeah. not going to take, it's not going to be immediate. It's going to be very hard. It's going to be a long journey. But like, you know, I am glad that all of this is brought to a head, but the outrage, I feel like because we're so, it's such a constant thing. We're constantly looking at Instagram or on yeah. Facebook or on Twitter, and like, we're reading these headlines and we're taking in all of this information, and there's not a lot of good news. And so it's just more and more reasons to have this like deep anxiety of like, I can't do anything. I don't have any power over this. And, you know, the people that are trying to do something, a lot of those things feel like they're not doing anything.
Yeah.
But we have had some change, you know, some like a lot of things have shifted. You know, I think that a lot more is to come for sure. But for me, I have been running off to nature on the weekends. I shut my phone off and I go for a hike and I camp alone, completely alone, because I'm still in isolation. I'm not ready to like re-enter society yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I pack up my car and I drive as far away as I can. And I just go into nature. I climbed up a mountain. I'm like going horseback riding this weekend.
That's beautiful.
Like things where I can connect into it, like remembering that my feet are on the ground on this mm-hmm. planet for a reason. And there is a lot of tension, and there are so many things that I'm fighting for, but unless my well is full, I can't help anyone else. You know, I don't have anything to pour into the other cup. So I need to make sure that my well is full first. And I feel like that has worked so well for me, and that's given me the ability to look at this as a marathon and not a sprint.
Yeah.
'Cause that's what it is. And if we're running, if you're running purely on outrage and anger right now, you are going to burn out.
Right.
And it's not going to look good. There will be a lot of depression. There will be a lot of people giving up. And I want to encourage people to look at Black joy.
Mm.
I was actually just on the phone yesterday with a friend of mine, and she was really struggling right now because she had a similar situation to me where, you know, she's a Black woman and she's in an, you know, alternative community, and like a lot of her friends are white, and a lot of her friends are suddenly kind of showing themselves for their beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard for her to process this because these are people that used to make her feel really safe. That suddenly it doesn't feel as safe anymore. And when she and I were talking, you know, I was kind of like, I was remembering like, you know, when was the last time that you allowed yourself to like turn off your phone and go have a nice time? Like what, like when you laughed? And I was like laughing right now for Black people in America, our joy is a protest.
Yeah.
Because I felt bad when I first like I wrote the article and I disappeared. I went like 4.5 hours north into the middle of nowhere and I camped for a night and climbed a mountain. And I felt so purely joyful, like really connected, really happy, really safe within my own body.
Mm-hmm.
And I was afraid to share it. I was afraid to tell anyone about it because I thought it would seem like I was being insensitive.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? Like what, that feeling, like that wanting to be like, I'm extremely always sad. I have to be always sad and in sorrow and in suffering in order for you to take this seriously. And the actual superpower of Black people in America is our joy.
Right.
There are so many reasons to suffer. There are so many, I mean, there it's a life of constant injustice. Mm-hmm. But to be able to, like, to be alone and feel safe in your own body, that is a protest.
Right, right.
To, absolutely, you know, to be among your friends and to be able to laugh and have a nice time, that is a form of protest.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yes.
And right now, I know that there are a lot of white people who are like, what is all of this suffering? Like, what do I do with all of this? What do I do with all of this anger? And if you're listening to Black suffering and you're listening to Black pain, maybe you can also learn something from Black joy.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true. That's so true. That's so true. That's the real lesson, you know, is that's the true power of, like, plugging into that, you know. It's like, mm-hmm. and that's the true meaning of life, really, is like, where can that joy be found through all of that suffering, you know?
Yeah.
That's the joy that's truly hard won.
Absolutely. I will say, too, I'm going to be, like, completely honest. I have a lot of privilege. I am a very privileged person. Mm-hmm. I, you know, grew up in a middle-class family, and I have both of my parents. I have a college education that I am still in debt for. A lot of student loan debt, but I still, you know, I have that. I have a roof over my head. I have a loving support system of people in my life. And I know that I am a very privileged person. So I know that even though I have had some very scary run-ins with police, I am not the first person that they're going after, mm-hmm. you know. But I do, I have that in perspective. And I know that what I'm trying to do right now, and with the work that I'm doing, with the writing that I'm doing, the reason why I'm primarily addressing white people is because that is who I grew up around. And those are the people that I have listened to so much that I'm finally like, okay, now it's time to listen to me.
Yeah.
I don't feel that I in any way have the right to speak on behalf of all Black people by any means. Mm-hmm. But I, like, in sharing my own personal story and my own personal strengths, the things that I find that I connect with, like, if somebody is able to hear me, they're able to hear one facet of what it is like. I've been, you know, connecting with my family a lot more and looking into what it has always been like. You know, I shut off from my family quite a bit, and it was like, you know, proximity number one. I grew up closer to the white side of my family. But I had to be really honest and say, like, I had a lot of judgment. I had a lot of judgment of the way that some people were living in my own family, mm-hmm. and thinking, like, well, why aren't you doing things better? And something that I've written about recently is that, like, I've been studying a little bit about respectability politics. And it's that if, you know, like, we all kind of have this place in society that we're expected to always have, you know, we're expected to only be this way. Like, white men are the only ones that can be business leaders. Like, white women are subordinate. They make good secretaries and mothers. A Black man is acceptable in society as long as he is entertaining, doing physical labor, including sports, and as long as he doesn't take a political side. And, you know, for Black women, it's either we are, like, purely sex objects or, like, this warm and nurturing, like, mammy, you know? And to exist simply as myself and as yourself in the world, and to not align with those things, is a form of protest against the concept that we have to be a certain way. Mm-hmm. When we have people on social media saying, like, what would Martin Luther King say?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you know, like, probably that. Like, why are you bringing up the only Black name that you know? And tell people how to be, like, it's so silly to me. But, you know, even our judgments of people when they don't fit into those categories.
Oh, yeah. I, like, mean, to be in denial, like, it's like to be in denial of those societal roles that are set out for you basically by white supremacy, like, for mm-hmm. for Asian yeah. women to be like not a not a servant, to be not a submissive flower, to not be like pining for an American GI, to not be like Madame Butterfly, to not be a dragon lady, to be opinionated, to be to have agency, to have all of these things as an immigrant, as a woman of color, as anybody that is different, like, than what you're sort of racially predetermined to be in this America, is very, very much protest.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's exactly why I believe that Black joy is a form of protest, because the way that a lot of white people in America see Black people is like, I mean, if you look at movies, okay, you have slave movies, you have criminal movies, you have like, there isn't a whole heck of a lot of nuance.
Right.
You know, it's the Black best friend who's like, you know, helping out the lead character.
Right. And with lots of like sage advice, like that's the thing is like, they're always
the magical Negro.
For, like,
that's exactly what
salt of the earth, like salt of the earth, like sage wisdom. Like what, like it's so weird how the characters that are sort of like sidelined have all of the mystery of life like decoded. It's so weirdly patronizing, but also like, I don't know what it is. It's just like the weird wisdom of life, but also very like, it's gross.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It's gross for sure. Yeah. And it's also like, it's a lot of pressure. I was there, you know, oh God, I'm not going to remember this woman's name. And I am so upset. I should have written it down. Oh my gosh. Why didn't I? Anyway. What is her name? She's incredible. And I cannot remember. Okay, whatever. I'm going to not talk about that. But what she was saying is how the concept of the strong Black woman is, it can be just as harmful as the mammy and the Jezebel. This concept that if I, like, it leaves very little room for me to be flawed, for Black women to be flawed, for Black women to make mistakes and to just be like walking through the world trying to figure it out. Black women are, when, you know, in told like you are a strong, powerful Black woman, sometimes I feel weak. Sometimes I feel depressed. Sometimes I'm really struggling. And in those cases, it's like, okay, where do I feel safe to ask for help? There's a lot of like pride in there too, you know, in a positive and in a hindering sort of way as well, where like when I'm constantly told that I have to be strong, I don't know that I can trust when I have to be weak, that I can go to those people and say, hey, I'm having a hard time and I need help, without being seen as someone who's asking for a handout. You know? I was writing about this last night, where the great fable in America is that Black can be defined, but white can't. How white people are allowed so much nuance. That's just something that people do. But when I do something, it's a Black thing. And if it doesn't fit into this idea of what Black is, then it's some, like people just kind of shake their heads and don't understand it and walk away from it because it doesn't make sense, you know?
Yeah.
Like for me, coming into my own concept of my own Blackness, I had to allow myself to be a Black woman who listens to folk music and Matchbox 20.
You know what? That's great. I love it.
You know,
I love it.
I had to, like, I am a Black woman and my favorite hobby as a kid was going to see car racing, like NASCAR style car racing. I loved it. It was so fun.
I used to do that
with my dad all the time. You know?
It's awesome.
Oh man, like there are so many nuances to it where it's like, why do I feel like Black needs to be defined in one way or another?
It doesn't.
You know what? And America and our story of it and the way that it's embodied itself in me is that like, well, black people do this. Mm-hmm. Well, black people are like this. Well, black people mm-hmm. think this way. And like, you would never say that about white people because no. white people are allowed their nuance, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, when white people get upset when I call them white, like, okay, but you've been calling me black my whole life. So are you just regular? And then I'll like not, but like that is white supremacy. Like mm-hmm. I want to make sure people really understand that white supremacy is that you can walk through the world and not ever consider your own race.
Right. Right. So true. I love it. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much. I love you. I'm so glad I got to you. See you. Thank you. I miss you. Hopefully we'll see each other in person sometime soon, sooner than yes. later.
I would love that.
It's been so long. Where can people find you and find all of your things and all your Insta handle and what's what and what's happening?
Well, I've been writing a lot on Medium. So mm-hmm. if you look me up on Medium, it's Elise Cizek.
Yes.
And I'm sure you'll have the spelling somewhere.
Yes.
Also, I'm on Insta, you know, follow me on Insta, Elise_just_Elise. And I keep trying to get into Twitter and it's just not going to happen. I'm not going to be a Twitter person. I can't get there. But right now, those are the two best places to find me.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Elise.
Thank you so much, Margaret. I adore you. I adore your perspective on the world and everything you've shared with me. And I'm really grateful that you've shared your platform with me today. It's taking over my dreams, waking me out of my sleep. I think I'm coming apart.
The Margaret Show is an Erios production with editing by Tracy Levy and original music by Garrison Starr. Never miss an episode of The Margaret Show. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. I don't know where to start. Coming out of the dark, coming out of the dark, coming out of the dark. Yeah, coming out of the dark.
Erios.
Powered by Acast.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.